If you've been paying attention to wrestling news this week, you undoubtedly heard that upstart indie promotion GCW signed a deal with Fight TV to air future live events and bring their entire back catalog to the Fight Plus streaming service for just $4.99 a month, effectively getting out of the pay-per-view business. Later in the day, two other promotions, Wrestling Revolver and Black Label Pro, followed suit. This move sparked a lot of questions and assumptions, and while we've heard from GCW owner Brett Lauderdale, I wanted to hear more about things from Fight's perspective. Enter company co-founder and COO Michael Weber, who is the guest on this week's Josh Nason's Punch-Out. Mike and I talked about the deal itself and why now, the future for Fight Plus and pay-per-view in general, the company's international deals with AEW, the future of concerts on pay-per-view and some barriers to that industry becoming bigger, and also his time in the front offices of WWE, WCW, and TNA. Some wild stories here. So let's get right to it with Fight's Mike Weber on Josh Nason's Punch-Out. So I have wanted to talk to my guest today for quite some time, but given all the big news about his company earlier this week, there was no better time to do it than the present. He is a co-founder and chief operating officer of Fight TV. Michael Weber is here. Mike, thanks for stopping by. Big week for you guys, huh?
Yeah, actually, it's been quite interesting, Josh. It's been a lot of fun, but we've been working to this point for a long time.
So before we get into fight talk, and I'm not just blowing smoke, as Roddy Piper used to say, I want to talk to you forever because I looked over your resume a long time ago on LinkedIn. You were part of a very elite group, my friend. You have worked for WWE as director of media relations in 1986 through 1989, WCW from 92 through 99 as director of marketing, and then VP of marketing for TNA from 2008 to 2013, the Triple Crown. Well done, Mike. Well done.
I appreciate it. And I've actually done some consulting for Ring of Honor in the last couple of years till their closure. And yeah, I've been around the block, but it's also called getting old. You get a chance to do all that stuff.
Yeah. What? So tell me about how did you first get into working with WWE? Were you a fan at the time? What was kind of your inroads and what got it?
No, I knew very little about pro wrestling, to be honest with you. I grew up in Ohio, I went to Ohio University where I got my master's of sports administration, and I had done my internship as a assistant SID, sports information director, for Davidson College, and I wrapped that up. And then all I wanted to do was work in college sports. I wanted to go work for Duke or North Carolina or some kind of school like that. But there's a guy named Basil DeVito, who some of your listeners probably have heard of.
Yep.
He went through the same graduate school program I did. And he contacted the professor who's head of the program and said, "Hey, I got something called WrestleMania 2 coming up. And I could really use some marketing help on this event in PR." And I went there as an intern. And after a month or so, I was promoted to head up the PR. And I was director of PR and then had a chance to work on WrestleMania 2, 3, 4, and 5, which was a great foundation to build off. In that time, believe it or not, when I started, there was only 60 employees. At WWF, and even being an intern, I was an older intern. I was 27, so I wasn't straight out undergraduate school. But I had the opportunity to get my hands on licensing, magazines, home video, all those elements that are part of marketing. But got very involved in at a very high level very quickly, and it was an interesting experience. Also, it'd be hard to imagine nowadays, but. You know, I was in Vince's office probably, you know, 2-3 days a week because everything we did with Hulk Hogan at that time, he had to approve. So I had day-to-day communication with him on what we had Hulk doing on certain days and stuff, PR-wise and stuff. And, you know, you can't imagine that kind of a relationship now just for a lowly director of PR.
Right, exactly. So, I mean, I can imagine, you know, young guy yourself at the time, getting in there again, not really being that familiar with this whole colorful world. And all of a sudden, you know, you're sitting with the personality that's Vince, and then eventually, you know, the 6'8 Hulk Hogan, Andre, all these personalities in the 80s. Must have kind of just been blown your mind in a lot of ways, huh?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I fortunately have experience working with college athletes, but I got along with all the guys. And one thing that comes back to me is, two wrestlers I ever had beer, first ones I ever had beer with and got along very well with, were the British Bulldogs.
Oh, okay.
And they had such a reputation of ribbing everybody all the time, but they never did to me. And I think it's because I wasn't in awe of anybody, and I didn't try to be one of the boys. They respected me. Obviously, I respected them and enjoyed working with them and had a lot of fun. And some of them I still stay in touch with now. I see them at the WrestleCons and stuff like that, the Hacksaw Jim Duggans. And oh, just a few weeks ago, I saw Jimmy Hart and the Nasty Boys, who are good friends of mine. So I built some lifelong relationships with these guys, the ones who are still with us.
Yeah.
If you look back at those WrestleManias from the late 80s, it's sort of sad how many of those people are no longer with us. I mean, my mentors on the wrestling side was Gene Okerlund and Bobby Heenan. And those two treated me like gold. They explained the business to me. And it was a very good foundation to build off of, for sure.
Yeah, and then a few years later, you and I should say you didn't just do these three things. You've done a lot of different things in pro sports and media and everything like that, but how did you then find your way to the shores of WCW?
Well, when I left WWE, I actually went into boxing, working for Trump in Atlantic City. I owned the casinos at that time. It had something called Trump Sports Entertainment. That ended because they're losing like $1 million a day with the opening of the Trump Taj Mahal. And I went into motorsports, working with monster trucks and Supercross, which I liked, but it was all right. It wasn't bad. I had some good experiences there. And then a woman named Sharon Sadello, who I had known through boxing, contacted me, and they're looking for a PR person at WCW. And came in there as a PR initially, and within a year or so, I was able to take over the marketing aspects there for about 7 years at WCW. And wow, I was there from the point where we didn't know if the place was going to stay open, what was going to happen, the Bill Watts era to the when things just exploded of NWO and putting 40,000 in George Dome in late 90s and all the stuff that comes along with it. So that was quite a ride and quite an experience. It's great.
Yeah, and then they all see the connections there must have helped you out in about what 7 years later, give or take 9 years later, when you end up at the TNA.
yeah so I actually got back into motorsports, and then the opportunity came out with getting involved with TNA and got a chance to go work with a bunch of people, a few people I knew from the past. But again, they're looking for somebody who actually had wrestling experience to work in the office. And obviously, I fit that bill, and it was a good experience there. I enjoyed working with them. And again, work with a lot of those same people. Yeah, because as you probably know, or most people know, almost all the television production people for AEW used to work at TNA. And I worked very closely with them in marketing elements and TV shows and stuff like that. It was, again, a great experience working with them. And so I go to an AEW show, who's one of our One Fight's biggest clients. It's like a reunion every time. I pretty much know almost everybody backstage at an AEW show.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I'm just saying, I mean, you must have thought about writing a book someday, huh? I mean, just the wrestling stuff alone could be a volume one. The streaming and everything with fight could be a volume two. I mean, this is ready made, ready made.
Yeah, it is. It's sort of interesting. I was talking to somebody about streaming the other day, and actually at WCW we did the very first streaming
Yeah.
back in the mid 90s. We started doing stuff, and the very first stuff we did, we worked with a company called I think it's called Broadcast.com. It was owned by Mark Cuban. And we use his technology to do audio cast of wrestling pay-per-view events from WCW. And I'll never forget the first time, oh my God, we have 200 people listening to it, not watching it, listening to it live.
Yeah.
And that's the start of that. So I've actually been, that had to be far as back as 95 or 96. And then we actually did do some testing late 90 of trying to do video. And frankly, people just didn't have the bandwidth to keep up with it. I mean, you could never. As you know, in the mid and late 90s, what we're doing right now on Zoomcast, you couldn't comprehend you could do that kind of stuff then.
Yeah.
But we had already, we crashed servers with CNN trying, streaming the programming out there. So we actually started there, but the home technology wasn't ready for it. And it really only became almost 2010 or so before the technology is really ready so that you could view programming on your computer or your connections that you would have at home. It's sort of fun thinking about what we were trying to do back in the 90s and where I'm doing with it now.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, you hear these stories, and, you know, Dave Melton, Brian Alvarez talk all the time about IATA and the audio streaming days, where basically is a precursor for a lot of what we have with networks or podcast networks and streaming audio and things like that. You're talking about this story. I remember hearing stories about the WCW attempts, and the everything we take for granted now was that people were thinking about it. Just the technology wasn't there. It's wild to think about that, you know, if things were a little bit different, you know, who knows how history changes, well, but here we are.
And there's so many things. Being a marketer and a PR guy, I would kill to have social media available to me in the 90s. Just think what NWO could have done with social media, sure. You know, all those kind of things. And well, here it is now. And guys like AEW and WWE have a lot of fun with social media to support their programming.
All right, let me paint a scenario for you that I'm sure has happened before. You're on your laptop, you want to watch a soccer game, you want to watch a baseball game, you want to watch this. And you get that annoying pop-up that says it is region-specific and you can't watch it. Isn't that the worst? I've dealt with this before, and I found a solution years ago, and I'm going to give this solution to you right now. NordVPN. That's right. You've heard about VPN services before. Nord is one I have personally used since 2020. And we're now in partnership with them, and I have a great discount for my listeners. If you ever thought about using a service like this, this is the right time to do it. NordVPN.com/F4W. NordVPN.com/F4W. Get a huge discount off your VPN plan, plus 4 months for free, completely risk-free, 30-day money-back guarantee. I think you're going to love it. Again, if you've ever thought about a VPN service, right now is the time to do it. Limited time offer. NordVPN.com/F4W, huge discount, great security. You don't have to worry about where you are, and it's awesome. Check them out. So let's talk about Fight. So originally Fight was part of a division of Flips Media, if I have that right. And then eventually it's kind of its own, you know, its own thing now, its own brand. I would think anyone that's listening to this, any pro wrestling fan, I'm going to say the majority, but it is hard to believe that there's not a pro wrestling fan that has not heard of Fight or at least used it. Even if they're not, you know, buying for WWE pay-per-views or, you know, anything like that, somewhere along the way they have interacted with, because so many things are now synonymous with Fight. Also, not just wrestling, but, you know, MMA, boxing, and then some other things like concerts and music I want to ask you about in a minute. But Fight's been around for, what, about 6 years, I believe, give or take. And to say that a lot's changed in that time, it's an understatement in terms of the business, in terms of technology and everything.
Yeah, we actually launched in February. It'll be 7 years ago that we launched. And I am a co-founder of the company and had the pleasure of linking up with a bunch of some of the best engineers in the world of Bulgaria. And we're technology first. And I think it's been one of the keys of success. Fortunately, I do have a heavy wrestling background. I do have relationships to be able to get programming onto our platform. But if we didn't have that technology, we'd have been dead years ago. And they keep increasing and enhancing what we have here. And yes, we've come a long way. And probably one of the best things we did is the first year we were in business, we had Jim Ross as our spokesperson.
Yes,
and that gave us a sense of security and approval of him being involved. And I got to tell you, I cannot be undervalued. It's very important. Fortunately, I knew Jim from back in my WCW days and his agent, Barry Bloom. And we were able to put together a deal that brought him on here and is invaluable, I think, to launch. It really helped us go to the next step that fans were not afraid to try it. And once he tried it, we had him on available and working with us. And as things grow, we continue to grow with the, you know, type of programming that we have on our platform.
Yeah. So people, again, probably most know you for, you see an event, you buy the event, traditional pay-per-view, traditional in terms of the buying approach. And then you also have Fight Plus, and that brings us to this week. So Fight Plus, I think for some people, may not have been aware that it existed. It didn't just become born this week. It existed for $4.99 a month, and there were services, back catalogs for NWA, some top rank boxing, bare knuckle boxing, and a bunch of other content that you've had on there. But really kind of pushed into the spotlight this week, obviously with the first announcement that GCW was going to be moving over not only future live events, but also their entire content library, which is a big part. And then later in the day, Wrestling Revolver and Black Label Pro also doing the same thing as well. So let's talk about Fight Plus then. So at some point, I would assume that the decision was made, we want to make Fight Plus more of a thing. We see an opportunity here, but we just need some bigger names perhaps to come to this and give people reason to subscribe. Am I pretty close on that?
You're pretty close. So here's how it all started. It's like a lot of things that we've learned here in the last 2 years, it's sort of born out of the pandemic. Okay. Mm-hmm. We had primarily been only pay-per-view programming, which worked very well for us, a good business model. But during the pandemic, all of a sudden we had no live events. And we had been tinkering with the idea of doing a subscription service. But essentially, I best analogy I like to make it, it's like day-old bread. We all know pay-per-view events do very well for obviously live and then a few days after that. But after 30 days, you hardly ever get a buy for those. And so we want to essentially make it on Fight Plus. The initial intentions were making the older programs available, viewing at a subscription rate. And it has had good success. Well, just in the last couple of months, we start now adding live programming to Fight Plus to really amp it up and give it more value. And the only place you can see it is on Fight Plus. And then we really did take it to the next level here of GCW, Wrestling Revolver, and Black Label Pro that you mentioned. But there's plenty of other programming that we're adding right now, too. And matter of fact, I spent this morning looking at some programming that's going to be added in December, some more in January, some special events in January. So we're going to continue adding more and more programming to what we have, the offering there. It's primarily wrestling, boxing, MMA, a lot of wrestling, which is sort of the focus of this podcast. But because wrestling, as we all know, has a lot more content because it can do weekly programmings. And just do a larger number of programs. I mean, GCW is committed to giving us 75 events a year. They'll probably give us 85. I mean, wow. They do a lot of shows. If you start counting up how many they do, it sort of boggles the mind, the numbers. But so we do a lot of that, the programming there too. But also, we have women's rugby that kicked off on Tuesday. We have the World Cup League rugby out of the UK this year. We have the rights. We got the men's, women's, and the handicap division, wheelchair division. And the men's has been pretty much on a straight pay-per-view basis, but the women's now available on Fight Plus also. And I've actually was looking at the numbers this morning. I was pretty impressed. Yeah. And if you ever watch rugby, it's a combat sport.
Yeah, it's
it's no different than boxing, MMA. In wrestling, people beat the crap out of each other playing it there, too. So I guess that's what tells, if you want to watch people beat the crap out of each other, come to Fight. We got it for you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's interesting. So 75 events. So so I assume, it like any other streaming rights deal, you're saying, all right, we can give you, instead of basically move away from the traditional pay-per-view model, we are looking for X amount of events per year. We're going to give you this amount per year for a certain amount of years, pretty much like any other streaming deal with these groups.
Yeah. So one of the things that's been good for, we were impressed with GCW, their fan loyalty. They always got very reasonable, good numbers, not WWE numbers. Let's not carousels or AEW number, but they got very good numbers and very consistent numbers. But initially we thought, well, it's the same couple thousand people buying their shows every week. We found, no, that's not true. A lot of these people were only buying four or five events a year out of that 75. Because, frankly, you'd go broke if you bought every single show they did. Sure. It was relatively modestly priced, like $13.99, and it wasn't real high price. So we did some more digging into the numbers of the actual buyers, and we found there's a much bigger universe of people who are willing to buy GCW, but didn't really want to buy, couldn't or didn't want to buy every single show. Now at a really low rate, they can watch all the shows. And we think that's going to really work out well for everybody. And then, of course, they got so much other programming they can look at in addition to just GCW. So it's not a GCW centric. It's combat sports centric.
Right.
What the whole problem. The other thing that's work. I don't want to say it's working in our favor, but it's a reality. Is I really think the economy is making a difference. We're seeing buying in general slowing down right now, which is, you know, something you got to pay attention to. You know, gas is going up, food's going up, and everything else. And so people still want to see their combat sports, maybe more so now. And having this pay-per-view model is a more economic, makes it more accessible to a larger group of people.
Yeah. So, I mean, because the one of the refrains you heard was, you know, why would GCW move off from pay-per-view to move to this? And I think you laid out a pretty good reason why they would do this. One is they have the, you know, the guaranteed platform that is well known. They have this guaranteed money from Fight to put on shows, and it helps them because they don't have to constantly fight so much for every single show to hit a certain number based on economic forces, things like that. And for you, for Fight, it has, you have a consistent, a brand name within wrestling. Again, not as big as WWE or even AEW, but within the hardcores, it's there. And for a lot of people may have not experienced it. They get to watch more shows because to your point, yeah, not everyone can afford or maybe have the time commitment to watch every single show. But now with on-demand, things like that, they can. So to me, it sounds, and again, I feel like I'm on the PR team, it sounds like a win-win for both sides, right? I mean, and I think, you know, for Wrestling Revolver and BLP, it brings more people potentially. They may watch a GCW show. They may all of a sudden flip to this and this. And it sounds like a win-win given kind of where we're at and where things are going, well, yeah?
Yeah, it certainly is. Unfortunately, this actually is not that new to us. Now, assume probably the majority of your listeners to your podcast are U.S.-based, but if you're outside the U.S., we have all the international rights outside the U.S. and Canada for AEW's weekly programming. And we've been offering that now for 3 years on something called AEW Plus,
yeah,
which is a subscription service that all you get is the Dynamite and Rampage and their Dark and Elevation shows each week, and which is quite a bit to get. And they have such a strong fan base, and it's been doing quite well for us. And so that also has helped us understand our customers for subscription, and it's worked out quite well for us, especially in the UK. About half of our fan base or subscription base is for AEW is actually in the UK. It's a hot commodity there. And we've learned a lot with that. And it's also from our side, the business, and for AEW side in this case, it's nice to have that almost guaranteed amount of revenue on a monthly basis.
Right.
And helps you make planning a lot better. It's not like, oh, I hope the pay-per-view event does well this week. Now, we also do the AEW pay-per-view events, and they do quite well. Unfortunately, they got enough of a model. It's relatively predictable because they're very consistent in their sales. But having that monthly revenue for a company is it really helps you run a business quite a bit.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring up AEW because, you know, stateside, we really don't think of AEW and Fight that much because, again, we have traditional cable and so on. That's how we watch this. But you obviously hear about it a lot when there's cool stuff going on during commercial breaks and the Fight feed is still, you hear it still going like, oh yeah, you hear people in like the UK and like, oh yeah, we can see this and this and this. And we're just like, oh, we have picture in picture and, you know, bring out the binoculars and things like that. But it's, yeah, I mean, that is a good feather in your cap and you're building that relationship with them and they're getting data and information about where they're big in certain countries. And, you know, I assume that's a win-win too, because as everyone knows now, data is the king, right? You have to, and to your, you know, with GCW being a partner of yours for so long, you're able to understand trends and things like that and helps a company make better informed decisions. And also helps the potential targets that you're going after for partnerships and things like that. It also helps them make better informed decisions as well.
Yeah, it does help a lot with doing projections and business models and so forth when you have a lot of data. There's a few other companies we had want to work with, but we didn't really have the data on them to make the best decision about how to go forward with them. But GCW and AEW, of course, have been good. And the generic wrestling is completely different prediction models than you would have for boxing. It's really interesting on pay-per-view events how many people for wrestling will buy in advance, whereas boxing, nobody buys in advance. Mm-hmm. And we've done over 6,500 live events in our 7 years we've been in existence, and it gives us a mounds of data to work with to really help make decisions. And fortunately, you know, our company is actually an engineer-based company, so they're all data scientists, mm-hmm. you know, and really follow the trends of what we got going on here to help make good decisions. And it's been, you know, a very successful way to do stuff.
Generally, the average of like how often do wrestling fans buy ahead of time versus other sports? Like talking about like a week, 3 days, 5 days, or?
Since we put it for sale, it's AEW. We put it for six weeks in advance of sale, or 8 weeks. They'll buy it 6 and 8 weeks in advance.
No kidding.
We have an AEW show November 19th, and we already have thousands of buys already.
No kidding.
And there's no – I love them, and we appreciate it. AEW loves them, appreciates them. But I have no reason – I mean, there's no technical reason. It's not like, listen, I'm sure you've been to concerts, and you've been to wrestling events and stuff, and you want to buy tickets as early as possible to get the best seat. Well, all the seats are equally the same size mm-hmm, for right. wrestling TV. So there's no technical reason why to buy in advance unless you're just a planner. And wrestling people do buy in advance to make sure they're ready to go. So when they want to watch it, all they got to do is hit the button and watch it.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we have a good technology that makes it, very easy. We don't have the spikes there that would make it hard to get in to buy. I guess, you know, some people in wrestling may have experienced that in the past. They may be on other platforms. That's an issue, but that's an issue that most people have overcome now. Crashes of the system when everybody tries to buy and turn on at the same time.
Yeah.
We had scaled our technology so we don't have that problem. And thanks to our wrestling fans, we don't have the problem because so many of them do buy in advance, and that leaves you one of the issues that you have in the technical aspects of streaming an event.
One of the more infamous cases of that, not with you, but in internet streaming, was when the first Conor McGregor fight on ESPN Plus. Because it's crazy because you think, you know, a ESPN Plus and driven by who they are and what acquisitions they've made, and you think that there'd be load balancing set in place and all, you know, technical stuff, you know, just ways to, you know, smooth things out, and they you know, when their president Dana White has to bring it up, and that's, I mean, they definitely took a revenue hit. But it's crazy that the company is still figured out. But fight you guys don't really. I don't see, knock on wood, I really haven't seen that much complaint, if any, complaining about that.
Well, I mean, the key was that, you know, for about 2.5-3 years before I came on board with the fight thing, they had been working on the technology. Okay, and again, I can't say enough about my good coworkers, colleagues in the engineering department, of what they've worked on and put together there. I mean, the record viewership of digital programming that's paid is the Mike Tyson Roy Jones fight from November of 2020, about 2 years ago.
That's right.
Which we had over 700,000 buys on our platform simultaneously at $50 a shot. Because as you would guess, you have a couple of issues. You don't only have so many people trying to watch at one time, but you have that many people want to try to do transactions at one time too. So you have a couple points in the funnel to get on air that you have to overcome all those, the bandwidth and stuff. And we actually are tested that we could do 1.5-2 million simultaneous buys if we had to, and we could. Now I just got to find the right program that will give me that many buys.
Right, exactly.
And the 700,000, I mean, frankly, I remember talking to our customer service people and said, Mike, is like, we only had 10,000 people. We had so few issues, you know, that night when we had that program on. And that wasn't a one-time only thing. You know, only a few months after that, we had about 350,000 buys for a Jake Paul fight. So we've been able to do the big event. Now we just got to get events that many people want to watch.
Yeah, exactly. You mentioned variant pricing when it comes to concerts, and Floyd Mayweather had talked about doing this before, and the pay per view to get canceled. Is that something that you see happening down the road, more experimentation with that? Is it like you said, the digital seat is the digital seat. It costs what it costs, and that's actually a benefit of pay-per-view versus the kind of the ebb and flow of variant pricing, which in the concert industry is driving a lot of people nuts, fans especially, mainly.
Yeah, I don't really see variant pricing happening. It's hard as heck to try to manage it, how that works. I mean, we do geo pricing because we're a real global product. You know, we've had purchases in May's 180 different countries, and I still want to meet that one person in the Vatican who's buying some stuff from us. And we have obviously there's different thresholds of what the price should be in different parts of the world. United States is huge to the highest. UK is a different level, and then Africa and India is a different level also as well. So we always look at it from that standpoint, the geo pricing there. Speaking of Floyd Mayweather, we actually have his next exhibition fight on November 13th from Dubai. And so we're looking forward to that. And we have a Pacquiao fight coming up in another exhibition fight coming up in December with a gentleman named DK Wu, who I've talked to this morning. I talked to him about once a week. The fighter. So it's a little bit different type of event to put together where it's actually the fighters, the promoter. Should be pretty cool. Yeah.
That's good.
I know Chris Jericho well. I like Chris Jericho, but I never talked to Chris Jericho about how we're going to promote his next wrestling event.
Much different.
He'd be more capable of handling himself on that, but that's not his thing.
Yeah. Someday, I'm sure. Couple final questions. We round the bend. You mentioned talk about potential recession, money issues, things like that. Concerts, as I was talking about before, it is harder for fans than ever to get concerts due to variant pricing, due to major acts going out on the road and their ticket price. They're trying to retain more of that revenue versus giving it to scalpers. You do pay-per-view concerts on the platform. Am I crazy to think that there is an opportunity somewhere in the next couple of years for artists to really get it right with pay-per-view concerts? And maybe the barrier to that is trying to recreate as much as possible of that experience at home for the viewer, for those people that are shut out and can't pay $300 to see Taylor Swift or no seats in the nosebleed, because that's the only tickets that are out there. But however, they will pay, you know, $49.99 to see a live Taylor Swift concert. Is there an opportunity for concerts to become a bigger thing on pay-per-view if that connection can be made a little bit more?
You know, there could be. We've worked with concerts. We have aired them. Matter of fact, we did the Kiss 2020 Goodbye concert, which many people didn't know about it, but we still did, you know, thousands of buys on it. It happened on New Year's Eve of 2020, mm-hmm. which was a Thursday, if I remember correctly. And we only started the conversation about getting rights to it on that Saturday before.
No kidding.
We put between Christmas and New Year's, we put together the whole event there. And I'm actually working with the rights holders to reintroduce it during Christmas this year. It was an unbelievably great concert. The technology and all the bells and whistles they put into this live event they did from Dubai, very much in the middle of the pandemic, was incredible. It takes a very special event like that to make it. But the problem we have in music is the music rights holders, you know, will only let you have it up for 24 hours or 48 hours. And we all know, especially in wrestling, since that's sort of the focus of this podcast, people will buy that event. I still do buys every single month at the original price for All In, the very, very first precursor to AEW, Ring of Honor put together. Huh. I'm still getting buys at $25. I think it's $25 or $35. I can't remember exactly what it was, but we're still getting at the original price. I've never lowered it once, and we still get buys every month. And so in wrestling and boxing, to a lesser extent, you'll get that. And music makes sure you don't get it because they want to shut down the show after 24 or 48 hours. So music rights have been more than a challenge to work with. In that response there. But for people still like that live experience in a concert hall. And when I first was involved in pay-per-view in the 90s and stuff, everybody said, well, music won't work because you're trying to push all this great music through a speaker this big. Well, now people in their homes do have their home theaters and do have actually excellent music and audio quality in their homes, is still a hard sell for people because they want to experience the whole thing about being in the audience. It has to be that special event like this KISS concert that we did 2 years ago, or a special event where it's Taylor Swift and, God forbid, Kanye West doing a duet together or something stupid like that, you know. It almost has to be something that crazy to get people to really get into it and be able to drive enough revenue for the promoter to make it worth it, because a wrestling event, a boxing event, MMA event are actually technically relatively easy shows to produce, because we're looking at a much more confined area, you know, 20 by 20, 18 by 18 rings and stuff like that to focus your cameras on. Whereas a concert, you've got so many more elements to it to really make it work right. And you got to mix the music right. Otherwise, it's a crappy looking thing. Now, we did do a Metallica concert a year ago, and that was pretty damn cool. They did a good job and it came off well. And people, you know, liked it. But, you know, after it was live, we had to take it down.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed watching it live, but then you couldn't go back and watch it again.
Yeah.
So music's got to decide where they want to be with it and how much they want to invest in to grow the video aspects of what they can do here.
So,
and you know who's been successful with it and figured it out? I know all the people who put it together, but it's not us. Is K-pop, Korean pop music.
No kidding.
And there's a company called Kizwe who we do a lot of business with, who's a technology partner of ours. They have had exclusive rights to some of these K-pop concerts from Korea and have done unbelievable numbers worldwide on their platform with it. And it's a very specific genre, but they've done learned a lot about how to do interaction within the programming with the performers while they're singing and stuff like that. And that seems to be a very successful business model that they have going right now.
Yeah. Fascinating time for concerts, wrestling, boxing, pay-per-view content in general and all that stuff. I greatly appreciate time you spent with me. So fight.tv, people can buy pay-per-views and of all sorts of things. And obviously Fight Plus. And a year from now, you get, say a year from now, next couple of months, you said more content coming. Obviously GCW, their first live event comes up mid-November, Wrestling Revolver as well. And more stuff to come for Fight Plus. A good time to jump on board for $4.99 a month or $49.99 a year, correct?
You're dead on. We've got a lot of good content coming up here. The other thing I want to point out about Fight is, too, is essentially the line is anywhere you can watch Netflix, you can watch Fight. So we're available on Roku and Apple and Amazon TVs and, of course, the manufacturers like Vizio and LG and Samsung have us as a native app, and also the ability to cast from your mobile to your connected TV. So it's not like the old days, you watch it on your mobile phone or watch it on your laptop computer in the back room of your house. You can now watch our stuff on your 65 or 75 inch screen TV very well and have the full same viewing experience that you would with the NFL ball game as well. And I think it's been another key to what we're doing to help our product being available to as many people as possible.
Yeah, super easy to do. I've done the casting. I've done the native apps and both. And yeah, all it takes is one person to show you to do it, or you figure it out yourself, and then you're set for life and you have another buyer for life. So good stuff there. congratulations on the big news this week. I'm excited to see kind of where things go and see what the future is for Fight Plus. And looking forward to it. Michael Weber, thanks so much.
Sounds good. Pleasure. Thank you, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to Mike Weber for stopping by. That was a fun conversation. Again, one I had wanted to do forever. And again, serendipitous timing. Just happened to ask and everything worked out. And he was more than happy to talk about the GCW deal. It's been a big topic, obviously, this week. Are other promotions going to follow suit? How does this affect, IWTV and High Spots and these other groups that are doing these services? And do organizations start to turn their eyes towards Fight if there's potential deals? There's all types of things that are going to kind of play out from this in the months ahead, weeks and months ahead. I'm interested to see what happens by the end of the year. And, you know, wrestling is, it's a domino effect business in a lot of ways, and especially for companies that are looking for guaranteed revenue every month. And if a indie promotion is with one of these other companies and they don't really like how things are going, they have an option to, you know, take things elsewhere if the money is right, if there's obviously interest as well. So yeah, going to be a fascinating time to see how this goes for GCW. I'm sure they're thrilled. I was amazed at the amount of events per year. That's that is wild. And not surprising, but yeah, just absolutely wild. And the, I mean, it's good for them, good for more exposure, and good for their fan base, most importantly, and for people checking out Fight. And yeah, we'll see who follows suit next. So the other, obviously, big name, of course, you know, with indies, there's a lot of interesting names and players, but I also thought of PWG, which is the promotion that is, they currently have a deal with High Spots, where you can, you know, buy individual shows, older shows for, I think it looks about, you know, $15 a piece, give or take, you can download and so on. But is this something that, you know, potentially down the road that they might take a look at as well? Is that would be obviously a good get, a promotion that has a ton of buzz, both, you know, and obviously their back catalog and things like that, you know, or if AEW gets a streaming service off the ground that has been kind of alluded to forever, is it a case where maybe they bring on PWG based on their relationship with Excalibur, who's on their telecast every single week. So fascinating stuff with rights and content and all this. And yeah, Fight getting in the mix this week a little bit more than they were before. So good stuff there. All right. So with all that said, I hope you guys appreciate the podcast. Greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the great podcast hosts here on WrestlingObserver.com. Big thanks to NordVPN as well. And that's it. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.